This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin on the stimulus stalemate.
I've told the speaker I'm available anytime to negotiate, no conditions.
He says the economy is ready for a rebound.
Now what we need to do is make sure we get the economy back to where it was before COVID. And that's a combination of testing, vaccines, and some more fiscal support.
And Pete Buttigieg, presidential candidate turned Joe Biden surrogate, shares his vision for restoring America's economy.
Look, part of why we have these American success stories is education, it's infrastructure, it's the things that at one time were the best in the world and now are not.
Those interviews plus TikTok's Chinese parent company has chosen Oracle as their dance partner.
Whenever we can talk about algorithms, you know what I'm saying? I like it as the secret sauce.
And masked life in New York City. It's Monday, September 14th, 2020. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Joe Kern. Becky's off today.
We're going to talk about this TikTok deal, whether the algorithms are included. Do you have to write code for the algorithms?
It.
Do you know? Well, hold on. Let me just. I know
you do.
You're all fired up because
let's talk about it
because
there's so much. Well,
all right, here we go. All right. I know you're all fired up. You're tweeting about it, and I don't follow you, believe it or not. But because I like to enjoy my weekend. But someone retweeted your stuff to me, and I'm like, oh, geez. Anyway, you're mad because Trump said he wouldn't do a partnership ever when it was Microsoft, and now he likes Oracle. I figure it's because Larry
Go
Ellison
the news.
Raises
we'll
money.
We'll talk all about it.
All right. Make it. I know. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to say, Andrew, take it away. Making headlines this morning, sources telling CNBC that Oracle is set to be announced as TikTok's tech partner in the U.S. It's unclear which parts of TikTok's technology are being taken over by Oracle. And I'm talking about the secret sauce, the algorithms, and we don't know. It hasn't commented, but I don't know whether the Chinese government would allow those algorithms to be taken over. TikTok also won't comment on the potential deal. Microsoft had been considered the front runner to buy TikTok's U.S. business. Until this weekend, Microsoft says it was notified by TikTok's Chinese owner ByteDance that its offer was rejected. Walmart was teaming up with Microsoft on its bid. They're, you know, algorithm experts over there at Walmart. In a statement late yesterday, Walmart suggests it's considering joining Oracle's bid now. So, Andrew, it's kind of interesting. You know, Microsoft, I initially saw how you were saying that there's something, I don't know, nefarious going on here with the Oracle in the White House and stuff. But didn't, Microsoft did get the JEDI deal, right? I mean, do we know that the White House does not like Microsoft specifically? Or do we think that they like Oracle more because Ellison did a fundraiser and Safra Katz? Tell me what you know.
I'm not sure how the politics have played and frankly, whether they've played in any of this. I think there's question marks now, and we will see what ultimately transpires here. You probably spent watching. There were some great games yesterday. Unfortunately, I was on the phone trying to figure out what was happening here. And the interesting part about this particular transaction is that originally Microsoft had started having talks back in June and July with TikTok, with ByteDance, about what was going to be called a tech partnership then. Effectively, the cloud, the Azure cloud was going to be the host for TikTok. And that was the interesting part for Microsoft. They were going to take a minority interest, not a controlling interest. And then the Trump administration turned around and said, no, we don't like that because we have a problem here. We still believe there's a national security problem unless a U.S. company owns a majority stake, effectively control of the company, and therefore the view was also the algorithm, because that is the business, and not just the business, for the algorithm to work. The reason why you get fed cool or fun videos that are appealing to you is because what's happening is the company is taking the data which you produce, meaning the data of which videos you like and which ones you flick through quickly and what other things you're producing, and then they're going and showing you stuff that you like. So they need that's like the oil. They need the oil for the algorithm to work. And so once you take the algorithm out of China and put it in this country, then all of a sudden now China has a problem. And so the question in this new transaction with Oracle is they're saying this is a tech partnership too, that actually the algorithm's not coming with. Well, the algorithm doesn't really work if you can't feed it data. So the question is how you could do that in a secure way. Is there a secure way to do it? And I think that's the question right now on the table, Joe.
Well,
and
we
so
don't even
we
know.
Can talk about the politics of it, whether they like Oracle or not, I don't know.
Well, and we don't know if this is ByteDance saying this, and we don't know at this point whether the White House will sign off on this. I guess, do we have indications that this one's going to be okay with them versus the other ones? I mean, Microsoft's a much bigger company. They already have gone.
My understanding is that the early indications are the White House is trying to find some form of a compromise. Now, it's interesting because from a antitrust and competitive landscape, you would have thought actually that a Microsoft-Walmart deal arguably would have been better in many other ways, which is to say that, you know, if TikTok went to Microsoft, all of a sudden you potentially could build a real meaningful competitor to a Facebook. So if you thought of antitrust issues with Facebook or potentially with Google on the advertising side, potentially against Amazon, if you thought it could stretch that far when it comes to Walmart's involvement of this. So in a way, that transaction created all sorts of other benefits beyond the national security issues, potentially sort of upending the landscape for technology, potentially in a good way to the extent that people have been concerned about competition. The transaction with Oracle, simply as a cloud provider, if that's all it's going to be, and we'll find out because maybe there's more to it, is probably less than that in terms of being able to create that kind of viable competitor.
What social media experiences does Oracle have as well? I mean, Microsoft has LinkedIn, right? And Microsoft's a much bigger company. Right. It'd be easier. There are reasons to think that might be a better overall fit. And then you got back to the fundraisers and the other things that I know you want to talk about. You know, I was actually kind of concerned
also think
about,
that Microsoft-
I was concerned about a two-anchor show, you know what I mean? A lot of times they stick another one on here because they're worried, you know? And it's like, I think maybe this should, I don't even need to be here, I don't think. Do you want me to just come back at like 6:30 or something? Or what do you think? The NFL started yesterday. There was baseball across the board. There was an NBA playoff game. There was a five-set match that was one of the greatest comeback matches with a speech at the end followed by the German that lost that had me in tears. And so I don't, you know, and then I got to admit I didn't make that many calls about this other thing, this whole deal here. So I'm glad you did. Attention, New York commuters.
We should tell everybody, starting today, people who refuse to wear face masks on subways, on trains and buses, they're going to face a $50 fine. The goal is to convince people that mass transit is safe to ride as New York City and its suburbs open up more in the coming weeks. But clearly the state trying to instill that confidence in large part by saying you got to wear your masks, especially in these confined, closed spaces.
Are you out and about? I'm just wondering what your life is like. Because there's traffic again out here. And there is, you know, there's places that if I go to get something, like a bagel or something, the lines are back. It's a very surreal it's happening. People are out. They're doing everything. And it's like, sometimes I forget, you know, I'm not in that COVID zone all the time anymore, which sometimes is good.
I have to tell you,
it can come back. It comes back very quickly. If I'm at a counter and someone gets anywhere near me, or if I'm, you know, and I'm wearing a mask, anything. And so, I mean, this is going to be. I don't know if we ever get over this, because I immediately feel very threatened. It's very strange. It's a very strange world right now. Tell me about your
now.
Story.
The Sorkins are, no, we're like you. I think we're much more out and about than we were. And there are moments, happily, I will tell you, where I think we're trying to forget about it. We were in the park just yesterday, and you wouldn't have thought it at all. And yet then, frankly, a little kid came flying over to my daughter and was right on top of her. And all of a sudden, I thought, oh, my goodness, You know, and obviously we were not masked, I should say. But then I thought, you know, you get concerned. So I don't know. I'm hopeful that we get through it, and especially the tri-state area where we are. Hopefully the levels are low enough that where it's not going to spread. But yeah. I'm concerned like everybody else.
The tennis yesterday, very emotional. And, you know, people that are part of this team and the two guys that are friends that played this five, they're hugging without masks. And everybody was hugging. And I was right. Like, oh, my God, they're hugging. And so, I mean, this is the way it's going to be for us forever. These things are happening. NFL is happening. But it's just weird, all the concessions and all the modifications that we need to go through. I'm wondering, is this... I don't know. When does it ever end? And I guess we're all asking ourselves that question.
Next on Squawk Pod, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin weighs in on TikTok in the U.S., mask mandates, a COVID vaccine, and the latest on the U.S. economy after 2020.
We are rebounding in a very, very significant way, and Americans are beginning to see the benefits of the economy reopening.
You don't want to miss it. We're back after this. This is Squawk Pod, today with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Joe.
The latest in the stalemate over additional stimulus for the economy, the Senate's failure last week to move forward on a $300 billion Republican proposal. Joining us now to talk about whether he thinks we can get a deal before the election, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. Mr. Treasury Secretary, it's good to see you. It was confounding to watch last week there's a lot of the public at this point watching what goes on in Washington and scratching their head. Can you describe exactly what happened last week? It seems like there was enough in that bill, even though it wasn't everything that everyone wanted, that it would have been a net plus for businesses and others. Why didn't the Democrats allow that to move forward? And what is the root of the disagreement between, the Senate Republicans and Democrats on this issue, in your view?
Well, I think the bill clearly had components that are supporting kids and jobs and small businesses. And there's clearly parts of the economy that need more work. And the president and I want to have more support to help those American businesses that have been impacted by this. I think there's many areas of this where there is an agreement between the Democrats and the Republicans. In some of the areas, we do have differences on the amounts, but I will continue to work on this. I've told the speaker I'm available anytime to negotiate, no conditions. And we look forward. I understand the problem solvers is going to put out a bipartisan proposal this afternoon from the House. So I look forward to seeing that as well.
Well, you do seem to be, unlike maybe some of the administration, the rest of the Trump administration, you seem to be able to go back to Speaker Pelosi and move beyond ideological differences. But, I mean, are you frustrated that you're throwing out the bathwater with the baby on some of these things? Do you understand where they're coming from and think they have legitimate issues on the other side? Because there's many Americans think, $300 billion is better than nothing. And it looks like we're going to get nothing at this point.
Well, I'm not going to speculate on whether we're going to get something or not. I think there is a compromise if the speaker is willing to move forward. I am somewhat concerned that she's afraid that any deal will be good for the president. And obviously, we have politics that are getting in the way. But let me also just say the speaker and I will be working on the CR this week, which is obviously a priority for us to make sure that we don't shut down the government.
Okay, that's what I meant by you seem to be able to go back and thank you, sir. May I have another? I just don't understand sometimes how it works. Where do you think the economy stands right now? Would you call it a V-shape? Would you call it a Nike swoosh? Would you call it a check mark? We've seen, obviously, the unemployment rate fall below 10%. But is the second derivative slowing without additional help, or is it going pretty well and we don't even need additional help?
Well, as I've said before, this is an economic scenario that nobody's ever seen, because this is a scenario where we close down the entire U.S. economy to combat this terrible COVID-19. And as we've reopened the economy, you've seen an enormous rebound. So the fact that we're down to 8.4% unemployment, people thought we were going to have as high as 25% unemployment. So clearly we are having a great rebound. We're going to have a very strong third quarter. But there is also clearly areas of the economy, particularly the travel area, entertainment, hotels, small businesses, restaurants, that are going to need more work. And the president and I are going to continue to fight for those parts of the economy.
Andrew.
Mr. Secretary, I wanted to pivot to another piece of news this morning, that around the future of TikTok. The president and your administration, I know you've been in the middle of these conversations and talks, has given a deadline for the sale of TikTok's U.S. operations. And I should say a full control sale was always our understanding, given that what was on the table prior with Microsoft, even earlier over the summer, was a minority interest with a tech partner. But that now seems to be what's on the table with Oracle. How can that be? And is TikTok still a national security threat?
Well, let me just comment. First of all, the deadline is September 20th. I know there's a little bit of confusion. Some people thought it was 15th, but in the EO, it's the 20th. There are two processes that we're going through. One is the CFIUS review. The other is the national security review under the president's executive order. I want to be careful what I say, but I will confirm we did get a proposal over the weekend that includes Oracle as the trusted technology partner, with Oracle making many representations for national security issues. There's also a commitment to create TikTok Global as a U.S. headquartered company with 20,000 new jobs. I'm not going to go into the entire proposal. We will be reviewing that at the CFIUS committee this week, and then we'll be making a recommendation to the president and reviewing it with him.
And Mr. Secretary, just so I understand, the Microsoft proposal, which appeared, a Microsoft Walmart proposal, which appeared to be rejected, was your understanding that that was similar?
I don't want to go into the details of the negotiation. I would say there has always been a critical factor for us driving national security is making sure that the technology on Americans' phones is safe and make sure that it is not corrupt. And we have a lot of confidence in both Microsoft and Oracle. They've chosen Oracle. We'll be reviewing it with their technical teams and our technical teams to see if they can make the representations that we need.
And just to put one final fine point on this, the algorithm, which seems to be the central issue in terms of what the Chinese government is thinking about, releasing that or letting that live, if you will, on American soil and be in control of an American company, is that still your understanding of what would be required from a national security perspective?
Well, I will just say from our standpoint, we'll need to make sure that the code that is, one, secure, Americans' data is secure, that the phones are secure, and we'll be looking to have discussions with Oracle over the next few days with our technical teams.
Secretary, you finally alluded to the real possibility that there won't be another stimulus bill because there's an election coming up, and it just isn't in one party's interest for that to happen. Are there executive orders that are being considered again? You know, that the unemployment benefit hasn't been the one that the president issued an executive order for. That's going to run out. How do you plan on approaching it if there is no more stimulus? Are there other executive orders being considered?
Well, we're always considering executive orders, and the president is going to make sure he uses his authority to do whatever he can to help small businesses. But there are limitations, and that's why it's very important that we have stimulus that helps the areas of the economy that need support. But the good news is we are rebounding in a very, very significant way, and Americans are beginning to see the benefits of the economy reopening.
Do you think that the housing data that we're seeing, foreclosures, et cetera, if we don't get a vaccine quickly, could this turn into something much worse than what we're seeing right now? There's some signs that it's in a lot better shape in terms of supply and demand than it was back, housing was back in the financial crisis in 2008. But are there warning signs if things get delayed in terms of a vaccine that housing could become a much bigger problem and maybe, slow the economy?
Well, the good news is that housing is nothing like it was during the financial crisis. That was a situation where you saw a tremendous amount of over-leveraged lending. You saw real credit problems. We've had a complete change on that. We have a situation with GSE reform where the GSEs, both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, have allowed forbearance for people that are affected by COVID. You see the president's executive order that impacts over 40 million rental units. So I think housing is the bright spot of the economy that is doing well, and that's an area I'm less concerned about. I'm more concerned about small businesses that are particularly impacted by the slowdown.
Andrew. Mr. Secretary, the president told Bob Woodward on March 19th that he tried to play down the severity of COVID and like to continue to play it down, taking February off the table, but just in terms of that taking place on March 19th. My question is, what do you think the economic impact, especially on small businesses and the like, has been because of his efforts to play it down? And the reason I ask you that is because to some degree, you could argue that by playing it down, it has hindered the opportunity to create more testing. I think there's lots of questions about why there's not more testing in this country and maybe other efforts that would have come faster.
Well, let's just get the facts correct. So first, let's start on testing. Mark Meadows and I just had the government enter into a commitment for over 150 million Abbott tests that are going to be point-of-care tests. Those are going to go to schools and nursing homes. Those will be delivered between now and the end of the year. We have another company that we're in the process, again, of quick testing at point of care that we're going to have literally tens of millions of more testing. So between now and the end of the year, we have an abundance of testing. The second issue is the president made the very, very difficult decision. I was there in the Oval Office when he made the decision to close down the economy. It clearly was the right decision at the time. And he's made the decision to open up the economy in a very controlled way. So I think when you look at where we are, combined with we've made major commitments on vaccines. Now, those vaccines are going through testing, but we've literally committed tens of billions of dollars of production to six or seven different vaccines so that we hope to have one of those completed soon so we can distribute to the American people.
Secretary, we had Stan Druckenmiller on. I know you're familiar with some of Stan's work over the years. And when you look at what Fed Chairman Powell said, that if we don't have stimulus forthcoming from Congress, they're prepared to do what's necessary. They've done a lot already. Do you see a path to shrinking the balance sheet at some point of the Fed and extricating the Federal Reserve from what we see right now? There's a lot of worry that while Wall Street is being helped, the people on fixed income, retirees, staying at zero forever has consequences. Do you see a way out of this for the next administration, whichever it might be?
Well, let me just say, I speak to Chair Powell almost every day, so I want to be careful in what I say about Fed actions. But now is not the time to worry about shrinking the deficit or shrinking the Fed balance sheet. There was a time where the Fed was shrinking the balance sheet and coming back to normal. The good news is that gave them a lot of room to increase the balance sheet, which they did. And I think both the monetary policy working with fiscal policy and what we were able to get done in an unprecedented way with Congress is the reason why the economy is doing better. I think had we not passed the $3 trillion deal and had the Fed not acted in the way they've done, including the various different 13-3 facilities we've worked on together, I think you'd see a very, very different economic scenario right now.
Mr. Secretary, the Journal and Freeman over there actually in sort of commenting on some of Andrew's points about the shutdown, there is a whole cadre of people that think that less of a authoritarian reaction by the government would have been better. And now they point to Sweden. I don't know, the people have differing views about how different countries have handled this. But do you think the case could be made, because it's going to be a key point in the election, do you think that the case could be made as it was by the Wall Street Journal, that trying to keep the economy as open as possible was one of the things that we needed to do, and that, you know, that shutting it, we could shut down for 2 years, but there are effects, and what we've seen with the rebound in the economy and the markets, maybe no one wanted 190,000 or 200,000 or 250,000 deaths, whatever it's going to come out to, but we're also trying to balance that against job losses and the loss of small businesses. Do you think that point could be made prior to November?
I think it can be made. And let me just say, I've sat in these task force meetings from the beginning. There's been different views from the medical community on this. This is a very difficult disease that we hadn't seen anything like this before. And I think the president got the absolute right balance. At the time, we didn't have enough hospital beds, so we had to shut down the economy. But now we've got to keep the economy open. And I think you've seen areas where we can now operate safely. We'll have an abundance of testing between now and the end of the year. I think that's going to create a lot of confidence for people, knowing that kids can get tested at schools. And again, we're talking about a test that you can get the results in 5 minutes. So this is really an extraordinary breakthrough.
Andrew. Mr. Secretary, just to follow up on some of the comments you've made specifically relating to the steps that you think the president has taken, the thing that I'm concerned about is that the country never really did collectively shut down. As you know, there was more than a debate around masks, one that was incited in large degree by the president and lots of states as a result that didn't pursue masking early on. And I think when I say early on, I don't think there was a lot of question about the health issues at that point, meaning the health implications of using masks. February, March, we can debate the mask usage then. But afterwards, you don't think that's had any economic impact at all, given that this country rates as one of the worst when it comes to both deaths, which is empirical, and everything else that's related to that?
Well, let me just say, you know, the issue on masks, and I sat, listened to the medical professionals in the beginning, and it was very clear the recommendations that were coming out of the medical professionals were, unless you were a professional and you had a fitted mask that was a specifically medically designed mask, that it wasn't going to help. So that was the recommendation, and that's what we moved forward with at the time. Later on, there was a view that you could use cloth masks. I think it's better to wear masks than not wear masks. There's still different views of the medical issues. But the important thing is, look, we've had an incredible rebound of the economy. The fact that we're back down to close to 8% unemployment, people didn't think we'd be back down there by the beginning of next year. We've reopened the economy safely. And now what we need to do is make sure we get the economy back to where it was before COVID. And that's a combination of testing, vaccines, and some more fiscal support for areas of businesses that had nothing to do with this issue but have been hurt.
All right, Mr. Secretary, we appreciate all your time this morning. We're going to have to end it there. And we want to see you again, hopefully, in the near future. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, is there more stock market volatility in a presidential election year, or are we just lucky in 2020? And former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg responds to Treasury Secretary Mnuchin.
The American economy and the corporate sector can do fine and can do very well under a fairer tax code. We've got to have one that can actually allow us to finance what makes America great.
We got so much more coming up on Squawk, right? Right, Joe? Pete Buttigieg.
We have Pete Buttigieg coming up. I'm going to have to calm down because I know we're going to hear some interesting stuff from Mayor Pete as a Biden surrogate. So I'll be here anyway, Andrew.
You're listening to Squawk Pod. Here's Joe Kernan.
The presidential election is 50 days away. Wait, is that? That's this year. Okay. And traders are expecting to see a pickup in market volatility. Dom Chu has more on your money, your vote. Hopefully it's a this year event Dom, and doesn't extend into next year. I guess that's a worst case scenario, right? But yeah, we're expecting that. I knew that.
It wouldn't be 2020, right, unless we had some kind of controversy or possible issue with what's going to happen with the elections. Any chance. It is so 2020 right now. But Joe, we want to put some context around just the stock market volatility that we've been seeing, because we all know that the VIX, or that measure of stock market volatility, is elevated right now. But just how is it compared to other presidential election cycles? Yes, I know that we've had a NASDAQ tech-led sell-off, but still. The folks at the Cboe Options Institute, the Cboe, remember, is the company behind the exchange operator behind the volatility index, took a look at the last four presidential election cycles. This is the part I want to show you. October futures, which is where you're seeing the elevation that we're seeing right here. We're currently at around just 39, implied for October. That's important because that October futures contract for volatility encompasses the election time period. It is more elevated now, stock market volatility, heading into this election cycle than at any other point in the previous three. You can see here, back in 2016, it was just around 16, just before President Trump took over and won the election there. If you take a look at this, the reason why it's important is because you see that peak. And then you see what happens after that October futures in November, December, into this next year. It does tend to fall off rather dramatically here, unlike some of the other times when we've seen more stable environments for stock market volatility, notably in like the 2008, 2012, and 2016 cycles. So, Andrew, I guess the takeaway here is, yes, traders are expecting a good amount of volatility going into this particular election date. However, once that date comes and goes, it tends to moderate out a little bit like it has in times past. Something to keep an eye on for sure, Andrew. I'll send things back over to you.
Hey, Dom, before you go, though, and this is, to me, the central issue, and I talked to so many professional investors who talk about this, and maybe we'll talk about this with Pete Buttigieg a little bit later. If Biden were to win, or were to be seen as winning, do we think there'd be a sell-off in the markets ahead of the end of the year to capture tax gains to the extent you can at a lower tax rate if you believe that come next year under an Biden administration, if that were to come to pass, that taxes would be higher?
You know, I've spoken to a number of folks, Andrew, that bring up that same topic. It all comes down to whether or not there's a forceful view from the possible Biden administration that they want to do that tax kind of reform soon, if it's going to encompass the first year of that administration. And if so, if you do have that tech-related or sell-off kind of carryover, because there are gains to be had there, gains that you can get taxed at lower rates at right now, hypothetically, if you were to have an administration that were to put higher taxes in place. I don't know if that would trigger at least a wholesale sell-off in the market, but there are folks who do believe that if you do see an administration come in that starts to look at tax reform and raises taxes, especially on those people that depend more on, say, capital gains and everything else, that you could see that kind of a sell-off there. Because to be honest, we haven't seen tax rates this low in quite some time. So it wouldn't be out of the realm of reason, right, to think that if people want to capture some of those gains and pay lower taxes, that they do sell. I do not then know if it reverses course if the market is constructive in 2021 or the economy becomes constructive. It's certainly something to watch.
Right. We will be watching. Dom, thank you. Appreciate it. We heard from Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin on the state of the economy. Join us right now for some reaction and to talk about Joe Biden's plans for jobs in the economy. Pete Buttigieg, former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, currently, of course, a Biden surrogate, campaign surrogate. Mayor Pete, it's great to see you this morning. Are you surprised by whatever, I don't know how you want to describe the recovery, but given that we have recovered more than I think even when I talked to Vice President Biden on this program several months ago, and the expectation was, and he said very explicitly, he did not think that there would be one.
Well, anything short of a total conflagration, I guess we can take to be good news. But I'm extremely concerned as we continue to look around and see something like 30 million Americans relying on unemployment. We're seeing a rise in food insecurity in the United States of America. You know, clearly we are in for a long, tough struggle. And, you know, some economists are starting to talk not about a U-shaped recovery or a V-shaped recovery, but a K-shaped recovery where the best those who had the most to begin with, they're going to pop right back to normal. And a lot of those who are most vulnerable, a lot of those who've been struggling for some time, are dug in even worse for even longer. I'm very concerned about what's going to happen when this $300 kicker on unemployment runs out. As I just look around my community, I think that we've got a long way to go before we can say that we have a strong economy. But we're just not going to have a strong economy until we deal with the virus. That's the simple reality of economics in an emergency. That's why we need a president who actually has a plan to do that, actually believes in science, and is actually going to be honest with the American people instead of trying to downplay or mislead when there's a real live national emergency on our hands.
Mayor Pete, one of the things that Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said was this is not a time to think, frankly, about saving money or to think about the debt. How do you think about debt right now, and how would the vice president approach a presidency in terms of spending?
Well, that's right that this is like wartime, and the biggest priority is making sure we avoid catastrophe. But, you know, it's still out there. We've still got to make sure that we're paying attention to our fiscal position. It's one of the reasons why Vice President has been honest with the American people about what's going to happen and where the revenue is going to come from. You know, Americans are already of the opinion that corporations need to start paying their fair share, that the wealthiest need to start paying their fair share. And we've got decades of proof in the American experience that when you do that, it's perfectly compatible with robust economic growth. That's where the vice president's going to lead
Mayor
us,
Pete,
and he should, because that's what we need.
Mayor Pete, one of the things that the vice president has said, though, is that he will raise corporate taxes. What do you tell the small businesses out there, the restaurateurs and others that are struggling as is, that they may get a tax hit come 2021 if the vice president were to win?
Well, what I can tell you is under President Trump, those small businesses are paying more taxes than Amazon. What you're going to have with the vice president, with the Biden-Harris administration, is actually respecting small business and asking the giant corporations to pay their fair share. Look, the biggest problem with American tax policy has been the loopholes. It's been the ways in which you can make billions, and if you've got legions of accountants and lawyers, you can park your profits in such a way that, you know, in some cases, some of the most profitable and largest companies in the world paying literally less in taxes than that small business, less in taxes than you and I did in dollar terms. That's not going to continue under Joe Biden. And in the long run, that levels the playing field so that those small businesses are better off.
Mayor Pete, maybe we need to change some of the, you know, depreciation or tax loss carry forwards that an Amazon uses. I mean, it's an American success story, what Amazon was able to do. Maybe we need to change some of those laws. But just to arbitrarily say that corporations need to pay more. We had a corporate tax rate prior to lowering corporate taxes in the Trump administration that was higher than most parts of the world. As a result, jobs go, leave the United States, go over there. We don't repatriate any of the money. It doesn't come back in. Even Democrats, even President Obama wanted to lower corporate taxes. So to just give that the knee-jerk, they need to pay their fair share, and things need to be raised. Don't you think we should have a more competitive tax rate with the rest of the world so corporations can flourish? Then they hire more people. Then there's more jobs. Then there's more tax revenue from the people they hire. Isn't a vibrant corporate sector something that's good for the country, not bad?
Sure, and I think we can have a vibrant corporate sector without multi-billion-dollar profiting corporations paying zero. You know, one thing I've always wanted to ask you is, why do you suppose that job growth in the U.S. slowed down under Trump from where it was under Obama? Right? Like, clearly what we had before was robust job growth.
Why do I think? So, because to go from 12% to go from 12% to 6% is a lot easier than to go from 6% to 3%. Anybody can. I mean, that's just a total specious argument to say that the job growth is higher from 12% down to 6.
All right. So the Obama-Biden administration managed to get us from 12% unemployment to 6%, an astonishing achievement. And then we see a little more of it get wrung out in a president who thinks he's a hero because that happened on his watch.
Had recovery. Every time when we have a recession, the economy is going to recover. That was still the slowest recovery in post-World War history, coming back from trouble because they focused on health care for the first 2 years instead of focusing on recovery. It's well known that was one of the weakest recoveries that we've seen. Compared to the Reagan recovery, after a deep recession back in the 80s.
Yeah, faster job growth than you saw under President Trump. And the focus, you're right, was on things like getting the American people health care. And you're going to see a focus under Joe Biden that's for the American people. Look, I'm thinking about my neighborhood. I'm thinking about the retired public school teachers who live next door. I'm thinking about the postal worker who lives behind me. Not going to benefit from this continued tax policy that only benefits billionaires and the largest corporations. And again, the American economy and the corporate sector can do fine and can do very well under a fairer tax code. But we've got to have one that can actually allow us to finance what makes America great. Look, part of why we have these American success stories is education, it's infrastructure, it's the things that at one time were the best in the world and now are not. There's a lot of measures where the U.S. has fallen out of the top 20, fallen out of the top 25. If we were looking at developed countries, I mean, if we were looking not even at developed countries, if we were looking at a developing country right now, one that's in the middle ranks of all the countries in the world, and we're showing up with a clipboard figuring out, you know, how's that country, or that, is that country going to make it? Are they going to modernize? And you saw rising levels of hunger, you saw difficulty controlling the spread of disease, and you saw escalating political violence, and a leader suggesting he's maybe going to give himself a third term. He'd say, you know, this may not be a country that can hack it. That's what we've fallen into under President Trump. It's time to get this country back on track before it's too late. And I think common sense is telling us that it's obviously possible to have a lot of economic growth and a fairer tax code than we have today, because that's what America's had for most of its modern experience before the last few years.
Mayor Pete, before we let you go, the big headline this morning in corporate America and really in Washington as well is the future of TikTok. And now what may be a transaction with Oracle, our own Julia Boorstin reporting in part that the relationship between the Trump administration and some of the senior executives who run and founded Oracle may be responsible to some degree for the transaction going their way. What would happen in a Biden administration? What does the Biden administration, what does the Biden campaign think of what's taking place right now?
Well, what you're going to see in a Biden administration is a vision to put the American economy and American national security first. Look, there's some very real concerns with TikTok and a lot of other software dependencies. What we've got to make sure is that they're prioritized not based on whether the president was mad at somebody, and that they get resolved not based on whether the president is friends with somebody, but what's actually going to make sense for America. And when you have a president who actually reads his intelligence briefs, actually listens to what national security advisors has to say instead of attacking them or calling them names, and when you have the kind of oversight and transparency that, frankly, any Republican or Democratic administration other than this one has considered to be table stakes, we're going to have a much better way of dealing with these issues.
Mayor Pete, want to thank you, as always, for joining us and look forward to continuing, hopefully, this conversation as these next 50 days move. And I imagine they'll move even faster than we expect.
And that's Squawk Pod for today. Our show is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
All right, Sorkin. You all right?
It's like a lot.
Between the two of us, though, do we not? There's something for everyone. I love Twitter, don't you? But between the two of us, we got it covered.
You can tweet us at Squawk CNBC, and please subscribe to Squawk Pod on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We got it covered. Anyway, thank you.
See you tomorrow. Thank you. We'll do it again tomorrow.
We're up.
We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We'll be right back.